The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted to introduce this new weekly live edition of Small Cap Investing with UK legendary investor Paul Scott. So welcome, Paul.
Hi, I didn't realise I'd reached legendary status.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's brilliant having you back on the show, particularly as we've had lots of big news of late. That last week, obviously, yes. The budget. We had Tuesday's US presidential election and then two interest rate cuts yesterday, both sides of the Atlantic in the UK and in the US. But actually, the biggest news of the week broke on social media on Tuesday when I understand you've now decided to set up on your own into a new business venture. So maybe you can start there. I don't suppose you could just quickly let the audience know what the new service is and how they can sign up before we sort of start digging into all things small cap.
Oh, that's very kind. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for the plug. Yes, well, after 12 wonderful years with Stockopedia, we mutually agreed it was time for me to move on and do my own thing under my own steam. So I've set up a Substack, so you can just search for it with @@ and Paulie Pilot on Substack, and you should then find my homepage. And so I'm writing the small cap value reports as usual. It's a format I invented 12 years ago and I've developed over the years very kindly and excellently hosted by Stockopedia. Now I'm just hosting it under my own steam on Substack, and it's got off to a terrific start in just 4 days. And I'm going to switch on. It's going to be a paid for service, £100 a year for daily report, 250 daily reports throughout the year, daily podcasts, occasional CEO interviews, all sorts of other stuff. And I'm hoping to be able to be in a position to employ some additional writers to write as a team. So yeah, and it's got off to a fantastic start. So thank you to everyone who supported it. And I hope a few other people will try it out.
Yeah, well, I've already signed up and I've pledged my support. So I've got the credit card ready to go. So when you decide to pay, then it will get hit my account. So I'm absolutely delighted. Okay, well, let's go into some of the big macro stuff, which just really affects the small cap sector. What's your sort of thoughts on the biggest issues coming out of the budget? Because Rachel Reeves was really sort of like a tax baby tax type budget, particularly on NI, which knocked 10 bells out of anybody employing a lot of people.
It did, you're right. And I mean, I've been on about this in my podcast for several weeks, because before the budget, it became very clear from all the media briefings that employers NI was the most likely big tax raising thing. So I sold my Whitbread and my Wetherspoons before the budget even happened, because it seemed to me it was a high likelihood event. So I dodged a minor bullet there. But the thing that really took a few days for everyone, including myself, to figure out was that actually it's the lowering of the national insurance threshold from £9,100 to £5,000 that is the biggest hit. Now that works out, I think I worked out at £614 for every employee, including, particularly hits companies who've avoided employers' NI by employing part-time people. The increase for them is the worst, which of course is hospitality and retailers and so on. But and we've had already this week lots of listed companies putting out reactions, and I've gone through nearly all of them actually. I won't list them here, but basically they're all saying, look, well, the Wetherspoons said it was a 60 million pound additional cost. Now their profits last year were 75 million. So it's a big issue, this is, but as one of my readers, David Hill, has repeatedly said, businesses like that will have to put their prices up, and they will. So I think one by one, we're seeing that actually most of this will be inflationary for sure. Yes. And the Bank of England has confirmed that, and I think the OBR have as well. So the issue is, it's not coming until April next year, so we don't need to immediately panic, but we're definitely already seeing forecasts downgrades starting to come through now. The brokers have been very slow on this, and companies have. Quite a few of them have said it's a lot worse than we expected. So broker forecasts for a lot of companies are going to drop in 2025. And I'm actually now more worried about the contracting companies. If you've got, say, big fixed price contracts, you've suddenly got a substantial extra wages cost. So I think, and funnily enough, Serco mentioned that this morning, said that I think they said they'd take an 18 million pound hit. I might be getting slightly muddled up with the numbers.
Yeah,
here,
they came out with a big number. Yeah, no, I would agree. Yeah.
So you definitely, I think I'd urge all the readers to look closely at 2025 forecasts. Have they been reduced? And this is for all sorts of companies as well. Any company that employs a reasonable number of people, those forecasts are probably going to come down, particularly if they haven't got, the contractual ability or the retail ability to pass it on. It'll be, as always, it'll be the stronger businesses like M&S and Next that will mitigate and absorb and pass on this extra cost. It'll be the also-rans, I think, who will really get hit the hardest, the very low-margin businesses that can't increase their prices because they haven't got any pricing power, and contracting businesses. So those are my main red alerts at the moment, that we need to really be scrutinise every position in our portfolio and see what exposure we've got to this issue.
Yeah, it seems a bit like deja vu, doesn't it? Because when we had that explosion of inflation after Ukraine, actually we could get, you've got to pick stocks basically which have got pricing power that can actually protect themselves. But you might find some of those companies with pricing power, particularly if they're selling into the consumer sector, then a lot of consumers haven't sort of gone through it in detail like you and realized that it's April 25 that it's coming in. Because actually in the UK psyche, actually, there's been so many headlines that people almost assume it's now. So they will not be surprised.
Yeah, absolutely, Paul. You're right. I did the same. It only dawned on me when I read, I think it was the update from Kitwave yesterday, where they said, look, we've got until April next year to put our prices up. So I think you're going to see job losses. I think companies will definitely be looking to shed some labour. Stealthy price increases maybe to test the market and see what the price elasticity is like. So as usual, it'll be the better managed businesses that will handle this the best, I think.
Yeah, well, I've got to ask you a favour, and this is on behalf of the audience. When you next go down the Mary Shelley, and if the price of the pint goes up, tell me, because they're already sort of preempting that move. Okay.
I just say Tim Martin told Reuters yesterday, the head of JDW, that they've got no intention of putting prices up now. But I did notice when I bought my meal deal in the Mary Shelley yesterday, the printed menu, the prices were quite a bit lower than the prices on the app. So now the printed menu was a bit sticky and dog-eared. So I don't know how many weeks or months it had been there. But, they've been slipping through price rises, consistently. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we'll all need to keep our eyes and ears open for that. So you'll see it everywhere.
Okay, good. Okay, well, let's move to the US presidential election. Anything dropping out of that? He's basically, really sort of jump-started the US economy. I mean, it looks as though he's going to put protectionist tariffs in from particularly from China, but really from, across the world. and deregulate and reduce taxes. So the whole of America, I mean, it was the fifth largest one day move in the index ever on the back of him winning on Tuesday. What's sort of your take with the UK small caps?
Well, very little, really. I mean, I think the only thing I picked up on was that economists were saying this is likely to be inflationary for the US. So because he's just, you know, doing stimulus and he doesn't seem to realize that if you increase import tariffs, it puts the price of the end products up.
Yeah.
And one of my readers also said that his American company was now massively stockpiling imported components, which so those are really the only thing. So I think probably could well cause interest rates in Britain, in America, to be higher and also higher for longer. That likely to be the same for Britain, isn't it? But that's all I've got. So over to you, Paul. I think you've got some.
I've got two. I think one of them is actually if he would put 60-80% tariffs on China, okay, and makes it uneconomic. What we know about China is it's got a huge surplus manufacturing capacity already. Now, if that capacity is not being utilized in going to the States, where's it going to go? And you can guarantee it's going to be dumped in its other big markets, which is going to be Europe and the UK. So if you're a player in small cap land competing against China, then you might find there's going to be a lot of price gouging going forward. So you've got to be careful what type of pool that particular small cap operates. But
I was going to say, well, most of the small caps I see import stuff from China. So isn't this going to be good for them, lowering their input?
If they import it, unless you're an EV manufacturer in the UK, you've got a shed load of potential electric vehicles coming over here, even cheaper into the UK.
Any of our small caps. I'm thinking about Lusco, Norcross. You know, these all have everything they sell made in China. So isn't that going to be good for their margins also, because freight costs have normalized now as well. So I think this could be good for margins. Yeah.
Yeah, that could be good. And then on the other, also on the other side of the pond, it's a stock that you own that I wanted, because part of the actual today is to highlight stocks that you and I both think are going to do well and could do well out of the big news. Small cap Hunting, which I know you own, which is an oil and gas sort of like products maker. They do a lot of sort of well services. Now, they came out with a profit warning about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was all to do with US shale, because they've got one of the best sort of like horizontal drilling systems. I think it's Titan or something. But because there's been a decrease in oil and gas prices in the States, they've seen less activity. But actually, with Trump coming in, he said the day before he won, he said, I'm going to frack, baby, frack. And so even in areas, and even in terrible areas, but even in areas like Alaska, he's thinking of. So he's going to allow huge amounts of extra permitting and energy security in the States. Now, given Hunting fell just because of a softness in its US shale and gas, it doesn't really mind in terms of the oil price if the spigots are opened and the oil companies can carry on putting drills in ground into their online shale. I don't know what you think of Hunting, because it's trading at a very low share price at the moment, and the rest of its business, its international, seems to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, I really like Hunting, actually, HTG. I got caught out by the profit warning, so I held a sort of standard position size in it. So I got it wrong in the short term. But I always look at profit warnings and just really try and make a binary decision. You know, I either think it's cheap and I'm going to buy more, or I just ditch it. And I have to say, I was really surprised by this profit warning, because the news flow up until the profit warning on 22nd of October, the news flow at Hunting was really, really good. If you look at the historical performance, you know, it's in a strong uptrend for profits and earnings. They've had loads of good news on contract wins and so on. So it wasn't a disastrous profit warning, and it's still in a very good performing uptrend. The businesses, they slashed forecasts for 2024 by 12%, though, saying there'd been slower demand in Q4. So I think they've slipped up really with their forecasting. It's got a remarkably strong balance sheet. The price to book, tangible book, this is below one. It's 0.85. Yeah. So they've got an amazingly strong balance sheet, very much unlike John Wood, of course, which is the opposite. It's crashed this week. And I'm thinking Hunting should probably buy John Wood now. Anyway, it's on a forward PE of only 9.2. That's on reduced forecast. 3.1% dividend yields. It's got big orders and a good growth track record. I think there are some concerns about the large orders with, is it Kuwait, I think?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, some people might have issues on that. I think you know a lot more about this company than me and its products, Paul. I've just looked at the numbers, and there was a very good webinar with management recently, which was very upbeat. So they seem to have been caught out by this profit warning. Very big new bank facilities were recently agreed. And it's forecast to end 2024 with net cash. So I think people should really have a look at this and, you know, do your own proper research on it. We're only flinging a few ideas about you. But I thought after doing my numbers, I doubled my position size. I know people say you shouldn't average down, but I think if you've dispassionately analyzed it fresh, and then averaging down intelligently rather than as a gut reflex action, which is nearly always wrong, on a high quality asset backed company like this, I thought I'd average down on it, so I like it a lot.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you, and I think also because of, you know, the oil and gas investment cycle, it's traditionally been cyclical, but actually it's less cyclical now, simply because most of the operators, right, particularly in the oil field services, haven't been increasing their capacity. They're basically just been improving the utilization of it. And if you get more demand in terms of drilling activity in the US, where its heartland is with its tight and sort of like drilling, horizontal drilling, then it should do well. And so that I actually think that profit warning will reverse, because I don't believe Trump is not going to do what he says he's going to do, because he tends to.
Yeah, good point. And the products are very innovative, aren't they? I mean, I watched the webinar where CEO just rattled through, I think, all five divisions, and this is a quite a high, reasonably high margin business with innovative stuff. With I think you know a lot more about the products than me.
But it is.
Does that sound right to you?
It is. Yeah. No, it's a good. It's well respected. Yeah. No, absolutely. It's an excellent oil services business. Okay, let's move sectors. Another one which came out of the budget, which got a real boost, is obviously housing and infrastructure, but particularly housing, with the government pledging that it's going to do 1.5 million new homes over the period, and loosening up planning requirements. However, on almost in that same breath, we've had a bit of a profit warning, two instances from Vistry. And I know Vistry came out with another negative trading update today. It does largely affordable homes. Hence, its share price had done very well heading into the budget. Everybody expecting that increase. But do you want to take us through the reasons for the profit warning, whether you see this value now? Because it seems to be, I mean, from my adjusted numbers after today, it's trading at less than 11 times PE on trough earnings.
Yeah, it's a bit different to the other house builders, isn't it? In that it's got a differentiated business model. And I'm afraid I got this completely wrong earlier this year, where I said before, obviously, it started collapsing in price. I was looking at the numbers and saying, this is a really differentiated model. They were putting out great trading updates by saying that, you know, then because they'll partner up with a local authority or some other party that wants to build a big sort of housing estate or something. So it's almost like a contract builder. They're not dependent on, so they've managed to sail through the whole disruption we've had over the last few years for, you know, from the mini budget and mortgages going up. I think they do sell some private houses, but it's mainly this partnership model, which is why the shares were doing so well. Then bang, that first vertical drop down there, that was them just saying, oh, all the finance team in our Southern division can't count. And basically we've under-costed all something like 80 million quid's worth. Yeah. They did a full business review and so on. So today, and basically they found one of Rachel Reeves's black holes in their accounts. Well, in the forecasts. So as you can see, it dropped to £9, then it bounced to £10, but then it's carried on down, and again down 20% today to £7. Now I've put my brave or foolish hat on, and this morning in my morning article, I called The Low, and I said this might now be a buying opportunity on Vistry. It probably won't be, but that was what I said when it was £7, on the basis that it's now only 1.1 times tangible book value.
Yes.
Now, that is attractive, particularly as it's got this differentiated business model. Why did it fall 20% today then? Well, they actually said, OK, the investigation's been finished. The problems were a bit worse than we thought. So they booked another 20, 25 million or so provision. But it seems to be ring fenced in the Southern Division. So I actually think that's vaguely positive that it's not infected. The same incompetence hasn't infected the other five divisions. So it doesn't seem to be a company-wide problem. So I think that the sentiment, market sentiment on this, I suspect could turn in the next few days. I don't have a position on it, so I'm not talking my own book. And what was the other thing? There was something else. Well, you fill in while I collect my thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was the chart. I mean, I'm not a chartist, but it looks like a fallen knife there twice, doesn't it? You sort of try to catch the first one, and then all of a sudden you get the other hand taken off. I think the house builders are always quite difficult. What was surprising in the budget is that Rachel Reeves didn't nail the house builders in terms of the land value profit uplift. I thought they were going to do that in terms of spreading some of that benefit out to the councils. So on that basis, that she realises she needs the house builders to deliver a £1.5 million, you know, 1.5 million house requirements. The overall sectors in that case should be good, and I think this is a one-off problem. I would say it's looking cheap myself now, no doubt about it. But who knows? It isn't roaringly cheap given they've had a profit reset. But you would have thought, I know Greg Fitzgerald, the CEO, he's really well respected, and his team would have been going through the South Division like a microscope and telling the rest of his divisions to go through it. So I would have thought it should be the final part of it. But go on.
Yeah, the other thing was, I omitted to say before, I knew there was something I'd forgotten. They said that actual recent trading has been slower than anticipated as well in September, October. So that's the other issue. And they've dropped their adjusted PBT guidance from 350 million to 300 million. So that is a significant move down. About half of that is due to the budgetary problems in the Southern Division. So that should be a one-off. But the other half is due to slightly softer trading now. But the reason they've given, I think, is quite reasonable. They're saying, the budget has held back decisions by large investors and partners and so on. So I think we can forgive delays there. Also, similar to Persimmon, the beginning of this week, they've said overall pressure on build costs for 2025 is starting to simmer away. So this rising inflation, again, of course, we won't get much lower interest rates. I know we had a cut to 4.75% this year, but given that you have definitely got higher inflation in the pipeline, wouldn't surprise me if inflation by mid-2025 has hit 5%.
No, I would agree. And that brings us brilliantly on a segue to an area company that I own, which actually should benefit. If they've got build cost inflation, then you can guarantee the brickmakers are going to be loving that. And the one I own, which I think is worth just mentioning, is Michelmersh Brick, which is a premium brick manufacturer.
Yeah, and tell us about that one, Paul.
And basically it trades. I've got a slide, actually. Here we go. That's what I presented at Mello last week. I mean, basically, it's a shift to premiumization. And we all know from things like Rightmove this morning that confidence is returning, transactions are returning into the house building market. If Rachel Reeves gets anywhere near her target, the Brick Boys will absolutely just make hay, because it's effectively oligopoly. And these are only have about 5% of the market, the market. But they will do well because they charge at about a 20% premium. They're aesthetically pleasing bricks, well-made, handcrafted. And they're sort of the brick of choice by lots of architects for sort of like cornicing and making buildings looking a lot nicer. So I think these are going to do well. They've got a very good balance sheet, cash on the balance sheet. There was a podcast last week by Investors Chronicle that was talking about, there's been rumors, or they knew, that Forterra had actually spoken to the board about a potential acquisition, which has now gone quiet. But this is a bit of a trophy asset to me. And I put my value, it's trading about 105p. My value is about 100, 158, so another 50% up. And I've been a long-term owner, 4-5% dividend yield. I don't think there's anything not to like about Michaelmers Brick. I don't know if you've had a look at it, Paul.
Yeah, I followed this one for years. I like it. I think it's a nice business, 99 million market cap, forward PE of 11 times, which given that we're probably at or near the low in the cycle is good. As you say, healthy dividend yield, 4.7% forecast. Price to tangible book is 1.46. These are the key sort of value characteristics I look at as a starting point. Now, it did warn on profits on the 3rd of September this year.
Yes.
There was a 28% cut to the forecast. And the only thing I would point out is that, they did a sort of big leg down the forecasts. I think that it looks as if the house building recovery is still only very tentative. Which, you know, I don't think it's a sort of back up the truck type of moment. But the interesting thing was when they cut the forecast by 28%, which is a hell of a lot in September, the share price barely moved, which is, that to me is very encouraging. That means the existing holders, you know, are not spooked by a substantial cut. They obviously are either very long-term holders or they just are waiting for the upturn in the cycle. So, yeah, I think that's a good solid value share choice, Paul.
I mean, one question I know you had when you wrote it up some time ago was about the long-term creditor in the balance sheet, and you were sort of like, what's that about, you know, because I can't remember how much it is. It's about 8 or 10 million quid or something like that.
And that, all... that.
It came from you anyway, but anyway, I mean, basically all that is an accounting treatment, because if you run clay pits to make clay bricks, at the end of the life of a clay pit is that basically you can fill it in and use it for like housing or for sell it off, and this is just an accounting issue of the 20% or now 25% corporation tax or capital gains tax that you'd hypothetically have to pay if in 10 years time or 15 years time you sold that pit for, you know, effectively for X amount on the you know, your net book value. And that's the tax you'd have to pay. It's just a hypothetical tax. So I thought that was quite useful because it's unusual that people come across it.
Yeah, I haven't picked up on that. So thanks for informing us on that, Paul.
Now let's swap sectors. I know the other one of a big sort of like opportunity at the moment is one savings bank, which you quite like, it's basically a buy to let. And again, it's in this housing sector. It should be a beneficiary. And the other ones have done quite well. And I can't remember who they compete. Is it Paragon? Paragon hasn't done too badly as a buy to let one. But OSB is now really trading at very low levels and it's either a value play or a value trap. And I'm not sure which one. So take us through it.
Well, I think sentiment is totally against it because everybody thinks, oh, buy-to-let mortgages, oh, that's a terrible sector to be in and everything. And that's a perfectly reasonable assumption to make. And but OSB came up on my value filters because it's on a forward PE of 4.4 times and it has warned on profits at least once, I think twice this year. So when it put out a trading update the other day, I assumed I was sort of braced for another profit warning, but it put out one of those infuriating badly worded trading updates where they tell you the granular stuff, but they don't pull it together and say whether they're in line or not with expectations. I mean, who writes these things? They're just PR. Yeah, I mean, it just introduces doubt, though. You just look at the thing and say, well, where's the bad news? Where's the bad news that they're trying to hide? But actually, there wasn't any with OSB. So I wrote up a piece about it in my on my Substack before the market opened, saying, well, as far as I can tell, the key metrics here are in line. So I think this is okay. Luckily, I got it right because the shares went up about 7%. Now, your main attraction here, so that 4.4 PE looks pretty solid, given that they're now in line with that. You've got an 8.9% dividend yield, which is well covered.
Yeah.
This thing generates so much cash. It's a fabulous cash generation machine, and it's got a very nice, clean, simple balance sheet. It's just a set. I'd never invest in banks normally, because you never know what all those derivatives and God knows what a put and call option. You just don't know what's in the books. This is couldn't be simpler. It's just a great pile of about 26 billion customer deposits, and then a great pile of buy-to-let mortgages. and then with about 2 or 3 billion of about 2 billion of equity, because it's trading well at 0.64 times tangible book. You know, it's really simple. And they're also branching out into bridging finance and commercial mortgages. So they're not completely tied to the buy-to-let. And they prefer professional buy-to-let landlords anyway, who buy through limited companies and have 10 or more properties. And it just makes a straightforward interest margin of 240 bips, something like that. I think they're trimming their costs as well. So, you know, if you do invest in banks, I think for me, this is just nice and simple. I can understand it, dirt cheap. And I did actually have some, but I sold them just before the budget because I didn't want to be involved in anything linked to buy to let. And I think a lot of people have done that. But trouble is now it's bounced half the way back up again and I missed it.
Well, one thing when I look at that, I mean, you're the expert on it because I haven't done the analysis. Okay.
Not really.
It looks cheap. Okay. Very cheap. And it gives me a sort of sense, again, a sense of deja vu, a bit of PSD almost, that if you cast your mind back to 2007, not good year for small caps. In fact, 2008 wasn't very good for mid caps either.
Yeah.
And you remember all those queues, people standing out of Northern Rock? And basically, the reason why the Northern Rock and Bradford and Bingley all fell was it simply because their cost of funding, they didn't have the deposit base to cover all of their loans.
That's right.
Went through the roof. Exactly. Because people started thinking, actually, some of the credit quality is a bit dodgy, and therefore I'm going to only lend them finance at very high rates. Yes. And so their model unwound straight away because they effectively their funding cost was higher than what they could charge out. They could get charged on their lending. And that, I mean, I'm not absolutely, please don't take this the wrong way. As like, you know, for the audience, don't take this the wrong way. I'm not suggesting they're anywhere like that, but it just is, it has a bit of a smell of that to it. Because I can remember looking at Northern Rock all throughout 2007 thinking, this is a 9, 8, 10% dividend payer. And the shares keep going down and it's trading at 0.3, 0.4 times book. I think that's probably it's either a perception problem by the market thinking is it another repeat? I cannot explain why it's so cheap, this business.
No, that's a fair point. I mean, a run on a bank is obviously the nightmare scenario, isn't it? I think though these days the regulators know what to do. You know, I don't think you'll see any runs on banks. And look, when you had a flurry of them in America a year or two ago, they dealt with it. They knew they had to act straight away, pump liquidity in and do an engineered takeover. The only thing I think that's very unlikely with OSB, because you've got to remember this is all secured lending. It doesn't do consumer or risky lending at all. This is all secured lending on buy-to-let properties where your default rates are tiny. And even if the customer defaults on the mortgages, after 6 months, you repossess and you get your money back. So I think you couldn't really be looking at a safer savings and loan type business. It hasn't got any of those funnies in its balance sheet that the big banks have got. So, and of course, the depositors have got the 85K insurance, haven't they?
It was more, I suppose it was more on the OSB, wasn't it? It was always, what is their effectively lending to deposit ratio? Because normally with the big major banks, the deposits are bigger than the lending book, and therefore you finance your lending book.
It is key, but I don't see any risk of a run on this because, as I say, it's totally secure lending. It's the least risky lending segment you could possibly look for, I think. So, but you know, none of us know what's going to happen.
I'm just too paranoid for my liking.
I do understand the point you're making. It's a sensible one. I couldn't find out what proportion of its deposits are time deposits by customers and what have instant access. I would like to find that out, but I went through the whole of the annual report and I couldn't find it. So that would be interesting to find out. But you see, the other specialist lenders that are this cheap are things like Close Brothers and STB, which optically look cheap, but have these giant PPI star legal actions going on with the car finance legal decision. Well, OSB is sort of on a similar value discount to them, but it, as far as I know, it doesn't have any legal or compensation issues because it's not exposed to that sector. So I think this, for me, is a standout lender that just looks, if it's been dragged down without fair reason. But I could be wrong. Yeah. Could be wrong.
No, good spot. Good spot. Okay, let's just ask. We'll have a go through a few questions. We've got one from Steve Lewis asking about another one with big news of late, Couth, which is basically a software sort of like service provider for really the youth mental health. They are dominant in the UK with schools, and they do a great job because my wife has used it in terms of in her school that she was in there. So it's first class. And on the back of that, with the data that they did, they won two large contracts, one in California, which was a flagship one. They did then did a big fundraise, and they also won one in Pennsylvania. And that was all swimming for about 18 months. Unfortunately, they lost the Pennsylvania contract. It was terminated. Anyway, I don't know if you have any further thoughts on this one, but the shares have absolutely tanked.
They have, and I've got a guilty secret here, Paul. I actually bought a few the other day as a pump.
Oh, did you? Oh, good. Yeah, okay.
£1.70. Despite, you know, writing up things saying, oh, this is too risky for me or something, I couldn't help myself. I just put just a tiny little, you know, fun trade. Yeah, so you're right. The main reason for the crash was Pennsylvania, I think? That was only
It was Pennsylvania.
But the biggest impact, I think, was a press article recently that said the California contract was also almost terminated, everyone's had kittens about this, rightly so, because although, as you say, they have got other contracts, the one that actually, it's such a pity because it moved into profit. The last accounts were actually jolly good, but that was driven by the California contract. So, of course, if you take that away, you know, the thing's back into sort of cash burning, loss making territory. So I don't know which way it's going to go, Paul. I have no idea. But I think, you know, it's a fun punt, isn't it? Nothing more than that. I wouldn't commit any significant money to something that's where you just don't know what's going to happen and where it's essentially reliant on really one big contract. Tell us what you think.
Well, I mean, I don't know, to be perfectly honest. It's such a difficult area. They did brilliantly to win it. They've clearly got fantastic credentials to win either of those contracts as a British supplier. So they've got something. They may have been difficulty with scaling it and to make sure that you get not just a service, an IT service, which is like, but you've got to have, I mean, I don't know, but in the UK, if you've got a youngster who needs mental health support, you can't just link them up to an AI bot. You know, you need to actually have a chat to them to settle them down. So scaling something as large as California or Pennsylvania, where literally you've got, you know, the UK population in those states, then, you know, it could be a bit of a bridge too far. I really haven't got a clue, but all I would say is that they do have something very good because that's why they won the contracts. But until we know why that Pennsylvania contract, I didn't realize that actually I thought they still had the California one myself, but I'm not sure.
They do. It was just reported by some trade press or something that they'd almost lost it when funding was pulled, but they managed to coax it back apparently. And there's a very interesting company called BetterHelp. It's a big mental health firm. It connects up counsellors and clients, because one of my relatives is a qualified counsellor, and she says BetterHelp is fantastic. And I'm just wondering to what extent, you were saying Couth is automated, but I think they employ counsellors as well, do they?
Yes, they do. They do. Yes.
Yeah.
No, they do. They do. But the point I'm making is that getting critical mass in new contracts, particularly the size of Pennsylvania and California, is massive to get that people person, to get that people, you know, to be able to interface. Yes, you could do it on a software, but it's actually getting the people to be able to support the youngsters who need that. And, you know, it's a big recruitment exercise as much as anything.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is. It's a very interesting niche. It's just a pity the contracts are a bit, you know, a bit more bite-sized and spread over loads of customers because it's too concentrated. But as I say, I bought a few just for a bit of fun.
Yeah. Okay, one for the stock watch list, which I think is worth having a look at this week, which is really from with Trump coming in with the sort of defense, et cetera, is Gooch and Housego. Now, this is
Tell me about this one, Paul, because I've done a bit of work, but you know it better than me. So
let me just get the chart up. It's struggled of late in the last two or three years. It basically makes high performance photonics, which go into high powered lasers. Now, the lasers are used for multiple different high value applications. Classically, obviously, into medicine with regards to cosmetics and eye surgery and stuff like that. That's had some destocking. Also, it's gone into industrial applications, high performance, like, you know, cutting of, you know, metals and this sort of stuff. That's obviously gone through a tough time of late. So that's the reason why the shares are where they are. They trade on about 13 times PE. But the key boom ones they're going into are aerospace and defense. Now, in aerospace, they're used for things like repair, overhaul, and maintenance, things like cleaning, you know, wings and repairing stuff and all this sort of, you know, that stuff. They also do for satellite, you know, guidance systems. And also the really interesting one is in defense, because effectively, as we see on the James Bond films, you stick a laser at the end of a gun and it's all for sighting, which is used in the army and for Air Force and stuff like this. But what they also, and if you go onto their website, is they've got a high-powered laser that knocks out aerial drones, which is on a U.S. Navy frigate. Now, that is, as I understand it, because I've done a bit of digging, that's the stage whereby they can knock out a drone if it's within about a kilometer or up to 2 kilometers away. So, and they can do it quickly, which is great. It just needs to extend the range a bit further to become really adoptive. But that's such a need, as we know from Ukraine, to be able to knock out, whether you stick these things onto tanks, whether you stick them onto ships, whether you stick them onto any. So high powered lasers could be a real game changer when it comes to sort of drone warfare. And these guys are one of the biggest players in that in the world. As like, it's a small market so far, fledgling, but it could be a huge area going forward. And then the final bit.
Surely there are loads of other companies developing them as well.
Not their credentials, not with DOD clearance and MOD clearance. You can't just rock up to, you know, the Ministry of Defense, knock on the door and say, "Hey, I've got a laser here. Do you want to buy it?" You know, I mean, you've got to be cleared. I mean, there's lots of barriers to entry. But yes, there are high performance other providers. But they're in the game, put it that way. And then the other side, which is really interesting, which hasn't yet turned properly, is in the semiconductor space, because they make the lasers that go into these massive lithography machines that likes of AMSL do these, you know, sort of 2 or 3 nano chips design, which go into, you know, NVIDIA's GPUs. And so they do that. So when you add all that together, they are a high IP rich business trading on roughly around about 11 times, 12 times, 13 times PE, trough earnings. And they're just wrongly priced because they've gone through, you know, a difficult period. And I think if these, put it this way, I haven't got any shares, but it's definitely right up there in terms of whether I'm going to push the button on them, because I just think they've got too much IPR that if the share price stays where they are, somebody's going to buy them. But I don't think it will, because I think destocking will turn.
Yeah. I think I remember in one of your interviews, Odyssean Investment Trust talked about this one, I think.
Yes, they do. Yes, Stuart Whittleson likes them. Yes, exactly. Yeah,
he's fund manager. 12.6%. The only thing I would come back at you with is that we had two profit warnings this year on Gooch & Housego. It warned in February, then it warned again in August, 16% drop in estimates in August, order slippage. You know, but then we had an inline update on the 8th of October, so it seems to be sort of in back on track with the lower forecast. So what has caused those forecast misses if they've got all these innovative products?
It was the medicine, that in the healthcare with the cosmetics and with the eye surgery, you've had destocking after the pandemic, and industrials hasn't come back as they want to. And likewise, in the semiconductor with lithography machines, they haven't yet sort of really started ramping up yet. But it's a matter of time. I mean, I would say this is a classic signal and noise. You know, I know it sounds unusual, but I would class the trading updates, the profit warnings as noise. And the signal is actually, this is a high quality IPR rich business that's trading at a trough earnings of about 13. Yeah. So I think I just don't think there are many businesses, high tech, which are like this on the market.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'll certainly have a fresh look at that with fresh eyes. I mean, it's lost 2/3 of its value now since August 2021. I mean, we know that was the peak of the market when a lot of things were overvalued. But, you know, looking at the chart, that says to me there's you know, it's, this is not a blip. This is reset at 1/3 of its previous value. So it kind of needs to prove itself from scratch, really, doesn't it? And the broker forecasts have come down a lot. I don't know. I'll have to have a closer look at it, but forward PE, you know, on as you say, on forecasts that have already been cut, balance sheet 2.2 times tangible book. So yeah, I mean, it looks interesting.
Yeah, I've gone for a sort of like a fallen knife. Sorry, fallen angel rather than the fallen knife. Anyway, okay, let's move to another. Let's have another one, which is really deep value, is Smith's News, which I know you've sort of pointed out this week as a potential opportunity that people should have a look at. These guys do. They're the number one newspaper distributor in the UK to sort of corner shops and stuff like that. And obviously, print news is a bit declining, but they are ultra low value, and they do have a few growth platforms going forward. So give us the update on this one.
Yeah, well, I'm always in two minds when I look at Smith's News, but it put out its August 24 results this week. So I did a review of it in my blog of whatever day that was. And basically, it's just a value share where you've got it on a forward PE of about 6. Now, interestingly enough, this is one where the brokers cut the next year forecast by about 5%, blaming the national insurance issue. I thought that was interesting. Slipped through. Yeah. A lot of people didn't notice that. So it's on 6.1 times forward earnings, not 5 times, as some other people thought. But it was a beat against expectations for August 24's results. It was about 5% ahead of expectations, so that was nice. Now, your best bit, your dividend yield's 11.8%. Now, normally I wouldn't chase a dividend that yield that high, because that's screaming at you, it's not sustainable. You know, I remember HMV paying dividend yields like that just before it went bust. But Smith's News is at no risk of going bust, because they've de-geared almost completely. And the beautiful thing about their reporting is they don't just report year-end cash. They report average daily net cash or net debt, which is the only meaningful figure. And you can't work out enterprise value unless you've got that number. Because, you know, as an ex-FD myself, I know full well, you wind address the year-end cash balance.
And I'm sure you didn't, Paul.
I did, big time. I used to mention. No, we showed plenty of cash on the year-end date, and the other 364 days of the year, we were jammed up against the overdraft limit. So it's you know, it's perfectly legal, but everyone does it to some extent. So you got this. So yeah, hardly any debt. People say it's a cigar butt stock, but the cover price increases for newspaper and magazines have largely offset the volume declines. But how long can that go on for? I mean, I don't know if you've looked at the price of physical newspapers lately. It's absolutely outrageous.
Yeah.
It's about £5 for a Sunday paper. And I just like, who buys them? So the question is, are they just going to die out completely, or will you reach a steady state where actually some diehards still want the physical paper? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I haven't read a newspaper. I haven't bought a sort of like printed newspaper for 20 years.
Yeah, I occasionally.
I just have everything digital. It's up to date. It's fast, and that's what I get. You know, but I mean, if I wanted to buy the financial, If I wanted to buy the Financial Times at the weekend, it cost me £7.
God, £7. Yeah, no, it's crazy, isn't it? But what I'm saying is, we know circulations have died a death, but is there a point where you actually start to plateau? I don't know. I just think it's an interesting question.
Yeah, I think it's got an ambient opportunity. It's thinking about, isn't it? It wants to use its network of vans and deliveries for early morning ambient. So I guess it will drop off. I don't know, tins of something or crisps or anything that it can put into its van and put at the doorstep of a convenience store.
That's exactly right. It has a a rapid overnight delivery network. That's what it is. And the Bulls argue that at some point there'll be a tie up with people who want to do rapid deliveries, like, you know, the maybe even the supermarkets or whatever. You could get a sudden announcement from Smith's News saying we've done a tie up with Amazon or whatever it is. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where suddenly there's going to be loads more volume rammed through this delivery network that is going to these thousands of locations anyway. They tried that, of course, didn't they? Was it with Tuffnells? They did a disastrous acquisition that almost pulled down the whole business, but they extricated themselves from that. All the nasties are gone. The pension deficit is gone. Everything is totally clean now, Smith's News is. So I actually think they're also doing something in recycling where they've got some bolt-on revenue streams. But I think those are too small to be material. But yeah, you've got a wild card there that it may not be a cigar butt stock, in which case you could have something that doubles, triples, quadruples. You never know.
Yeah. No, it looks like a classic Benjamin Graham type stock, that one to me. Mm. Okay, we've got a couple of questions. One about your largest position, just quickly, and one about my largest position. So let's start yours. We've got Plexus. David H. is just saying, what's happened this week with Plexus?
Waiting for... Yeah, I mean, they put out lovely results, but unfortunately it accompanied with it a statement saying, oh, we're going to need to do another fundraise, which they had actually pre-announced in late 2022, I think it was. So, but the trouble is, you know, the market hates the uncertainty over fundraises, doesn't it? My personal view is that management owns 60%, so that, and they are totally averse to dilution, so... I wouldn't be, and they're rich, so I wouldn't be surprised if they cornerstone the fundraise. But we're just in the lap of the gods at the moment. I haven't spoken to the company yet. I keep meaning to speak to the CEO. I mean, I'm detached from the share price movements. I do look at them, sort of, but it doesn't concern me. I could end up, you know, getting absolutely walloped with this one if they do a discounted fundraise. I just think a discounted fundraise in this case is very unlikely, but I could be wrong. So, yeah, I totally understand why a lot of people just want to sit it out, wait and see what happens. But they've got fabulous technology. They've just reported a bumper profit with a couple of one-off deals. The commentary is very positive. So I think they could go and sit in front of a few high net worths and or institutions and just say, look, we only need to raise 2 or 3 million. It's for growth because they're expanding their rental fleet again. There's a lot of positive stuff going on at Plexus, but unfortunately, it just needs a top-up placing. I'm not concerned about it. I think it'll be all right, but I could be wrong. So I totally get why a lot of people would just say let's wait and see. But you see, the way I look at it is I want a big position in this, and you can't buy or sell a big position. You get involved, and then anyway, you're going to tell us about equals.
I know. But I'll just add that. I mean, as a broader investing rule, what you've just raised there is what you need to do. If you want to generate alpha over the long term, you cannot just follow the crowd. You've basically, you've got selectively fight battles that some you may win, sometimes you may lose, etc. We don't know going forward. But however, if you just follow everybody else, you'll just make same returns as everybody else. But if you actually want a differentiated, idiosyncratic, high-generating overall portfolio, and you're prepared to stomach the ups and downs of it, over the long term, you'll do well. And I think that's exactly... You know, that's a credit to you, because you have to sometimes stick your neck out, don't you? You know, because
back in February or wherever it was, I looked like a genius because this thing Fiplex is 15 bagged last year, I think it was, on major contract news, and I got in with a big stake pretty much near the start of that big move up. But unfortunately, the news flow just dried up. The news flow was fantastic up until about February of this year. Then we had a 6 or 7 month gap with nothing. So obviously, you know, it's gone back down again. It's lost about 2/3 of its value from the peak, which is very disappointing. There's no way around it. But that's been reflected now in a share price where I think risk reward is actually attractive again because it's so cheap again. So all it would take is another big contract win announcement, and you know, it could double or triple again in the blink of an eye, and you wouldn't be able to buy a big position. So once the fundraising risk is out the way, you know, hopefully they'll give existing holders preemption rights, but of course that costs a lot more to do. So look, I don't know how it's going to pan out. So I've said to my readers as well, even though I've got 3% of the company, I've said to my readers, look, on my system, this has to be amber red because of the dilution risk. So just because I own a big stake in something doesn't skew my my overall verdict on the share for the small cap value report readers. We've got to be consistent, and this is because of dilution risk, this has to be amber red. But I think the potential upside is massive on it, but it is higher risk, no doubt about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. As I say, it's a credit to you by picking it and basically sticking on it. We've got one from Graham, Mr. Nairy, apparently, and he says, good luck there.
Paul. Hello, Graham.
he says good luck on that one, Paul. okay, then we've got David Amis. He's asking about Equals, which is my largest position. I mean, I've held this for like 5 years. Hey, we all know the story. It's over 12 months now, this strategic review. The next put up or shut up is in about a week, or I think it's the 20th or something like that of November. I think it'll be concluded before then. There'll be an announcement. They said last time it was just purely doing documentation, which probably means that now sounding out some of the larger shareholders to try and get irrevocables. I don't know. I haven't really got a clue. And I think certain people probably from across the market are a bit sort of like wary whether a bid is going to come, because we've had cab payments, we've had StoneX deciding to walk away from cab payments just this last week. So hey, I'm with you. Who knows? I've held for 5 years. I'll be happy to help for another 5 years if it walks. Well, I've always said that because I think the business is doing really well. So we'll wait and see.
Quickly, just to come back on that, the last update from Equals, I also came to the conclusion that this looks as if it's going to cross the line imminently. Yeah. That's assuming, of course, that the company is giving us all the fully accurate information. We do have to take their word for it, don't we? So, yeah, it looks close to being a done deal, I agree. But I've never quite liked the smell of this, if I'm honest.
Yeah. Well, I have. I've gone full bore on it, mate. So,
yeah, good luck, Paul. Fingers and toes, everything's crossed.
No, I'm big into payments. I've basically got this one. I've got PayPal, and I also own, which has been less good, Argentex. But hey ho, you live and learn, don't you, at the moment? But
is that going to turn around? Do you think? Because it's dirt cheap.
Argentex. Yeah, I do. Yeah, no, I think Argentex will absolutely. But hey, it's not without risk, and it wasn't one I'd highlight as a severe buy at the moment. But it's certainly one I'm not. There's no reason why I'm going to. Going to sell at these levels. Okay, another one I want to highlight, which came out with news, which is sort of like, I think it's got a bad perception problem as much as anything. That's because the reality is much better, is Venture Life, which does OTC healthcare product, consumer products company. And it's quite big into women's health. Anyway, it's struggled over top level the half year in terms of its organic growth. But if you actually gone further down from the headlines, its own brands increased by 8% organically at the half year. And it was only destocking in its customer brands, its third party brands, that brought the top line down. So you've got that sort of like, once that destocking is finished, which finishes towards the end of this year, you'll then see high single digits, if not double digit organic growth next year. But the reason why I'm raising it, is it's just bought a business called Health and Her that is one of the largest providers in the menopause women's health sector. And this is a market, and when you look at the analysts, they're saying going from $16 billion in 2023 to $600 billion. I mean, when I read the statement, I had to say, is there a mistyping there? Because it was enormous. Now, it obviously won't be as much as that, I wouldn't have thought. But it only got to get a half of that or a quarter of that, it'll still be electrifying growth. And this company, Health and Hers, is unprofitable at the moment. It's bought up for about 10 million quid. But it'll be integrated and will become profitable. And I actually think, and I'd put my flag to the mast on this one, I think in 2 to 3 years' time, you'll see terrific top-line growth if those estimates for basically menopause and perimenopause health, those growth estimates go anywhere near it.
Is it a drug?
It's supplements. It's basically it's supplements and stuff like that. And they also do an app which is the world's second most popular with advice. And the reason why that works so well, it gives you a frontline sort of insight into your customer base about new product development, how they're using it, and obviously upselling, etc. So that's gone really well. I just think this is totally mispriced because it's trading at roughly around about, I don't know, 7 times next year's PE. It's got, the balance sheet is absolutely fine. It's 1.7 times net debt to EBITDA, but it's coming down to, by the end of 2025, less than 1 times again. And it's the top line growth story that I think people haven't seen it. And the reason why maybe they haven't seen it from Health and Hers is because the broker hasn't upgraded their numbers yet. And they're only going to do that in January. And I interviewed the CEO, and I really think, hey, unless I'm wrong about menopause and stuff, but it isn't just women's menopause, it's men's menopause. And the statistic that Jerry, with the CEO, told me, which is incredible, 15 million women in the UK alone are suffering from perimenopause, postmenopause, or menopause at any one particular time and suffering without taking it. And hey, I just think this could be transformational for the company. I know it's a cliche phrase, but I just think this could make a significant increase, you know, in its top line. It's currently on, revenues around about sort of 60 mil. This Health and Her could go from 7 million or 6, 7 million turnover at the moment run rate. I think this could be over 20 in 2 or 3 years' time if they get anywhere right. So I would definitely strongly recommend people put this on their watch list because it just looks wrong price for something with a real potential growth engine. Unless people tell me if menopause is, it just isn't going to happen. I don't know. But if you believe what the analysts are saying, then it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm always wary about companies that quote total market sizes and total market growth and whatever, because the figures are meaningless, really, because, you know, a small cap won't even get, you know, a fraction of a percent of the total market size, realistically. But I mean, I'm more than happy to look at it because I checked my previous notes on Venture Life. I've always seen it moderately negatively. There was all that kerfuffle a few years ago when they raised some money at a premium. It's one of those sort of table shaped moves on the chart, shot up, plateaued, and then went down. Right at the top, management dumped most of their personal holdings. It was very, very, whilst talking up the position, but that was a few years ago now. Although my more recent notes on Venture, and it seems a sort of ragtag of kind of also ran type products. It reminded me a bit of sort of Creighton's or what's that one? BAR is the ticker, Brand Architects, you know, just lots of small, fairly unimpressive products. But I looked at my more recent notes on Venture Life, and I was actually warming to it. I thought the figures were improving and it was starting to look a lot better, I thought. I see it's 54 million market cap, isn't it? So, yeah. I'll take a fresh look at that, Paul. And they funded the latest acquisition from debt, I would assume, haven't they?
That's correct, yeah.
So it didn't do a place.
No. Anyway,
I'll research that weekend.
I think it could be a game changer, basically, for the business. Okay, we've got just the last one. We've got a couple of people asking. We've got Stuart Wilson asking about Ampario, and we've also got another guy. I can't remember what his name was. He sent me a note asking about Ampario as well. This is an animal feeds business that does all natural sort of like products that help cleanse the whole sort of food chain. And I think they've just bought somebody out in the States at a very good price. Anyway, the shares have done really well. And I think one of the technologies that they've just...
Well, from a low base, Paul. I mean, they sold...
But anyway, to coin a pun, I think one of the reasons the shares have improved is that they've digested or ingested one of the products from this acquisition is a capsule in a capsule. And one of the important things for animal health is to be able, right, if you've got different types of drugs different types of, you know, natural food ingredients you want to improve the sort of diet of it, you can then with a capsule you can put more than one treatment into one capsule and therefore treat the animal all in one go rather than having to open its mouth 4 or 5 times.
I'm going to say, you don't have to get it in a headlock to take it.
Yeah, exactly.
Rushing around. I've had that with my dog and he's only knows that he can fight his way out of a headlock. I like Ampario. I think it's very it went from £7 at the peak of the market in 21 down to £2, so it's been a big disappointer. But in the last year it has actually got into a nice uptrend again, and it's now £3.37. Last time I looked at it, I thought it looked really good, actually. I can't remember any of the details. I think this is the one with lots of cash, isn't it, on the balance sheet? Yes, it's got a nice, yeah, strong balance sheet. I think the last trading update was good, if I remember correctly. Oh, yes, and you've got a nice rising trend of broker forecasts. Well, that was what we like to see, sort of stair-step movements in the broker forecasts on that lovely little graph that Stockopedia do, which is I use a lot. So yeah, I think Ampario is very good. And one of the readers, and it might be the chap who, one of the chaps who's asking about this actually,
yeah,
I remember Stuart's name, so it might have been him who messaged me saying, yeah, that apparently there's something about the broker forecast that I think they didn't include. Oh, do you know what, I've forgotten, but basically the broker forecasts were, maybe they included goodwill amortization, or there was something like that, that actually, yeah, underlying numbers would be a good bit higher, he reckoned. Yeah. So yeah, I think Ampario is good. It was on my potential buys list, but I didn't buy any personally, but I would seriously consider having a few of those in my portfolio. Yeah, looks as if it's,
yeah, no, I like it as well. Just a cheeky last one from Edward Hardy. He's asking about Time Finance, which I think is a sort of like a debt provider, basically, to sort of subprime.
Don't like the shares.
Have done remarkably well.
Yeah, but I think its longer term history is not very good. This was the one. Was this 1PM? It used to be called.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No, I didn't like it. Hopefully, it's got new management now, because the old lot weren't much good. no, I don't. I mean, it's 1.4 times tangible book. So no, not for me, but yes, the shares have done really, really well. So well done on everyone who's made a bob or two in it. That's what it's about, isn't it?
Brilliant.
Do you like it, Paul?
I don't like that industry. I don't like subprime, to be honest, just because I have those, as I say, I have nightmares from what happened in the subprime crisis in 2007, 2008, and it got all taken. So They tend to be very cyclical stocks. They do well when everything's swimming and the finance is available, but they go horribly wrong. They unwind very rapidly.
I couldn't agree more. You get a recession and suddenly, you know, you're one bad debt provision away from, you know, the thing going bust. Also, you've got to bear in mind the lenders who actually lend them the bulk of their money have on occasion pulled those entire facilities and pushed these type of companies into insolvency. So there's a lot of risk. And I think people have done well on the shares. If it was me personally, I'd be banking the profit. But, you know, that's not, it's up to each. Everyone's got, it's their money, your money, your choice, isn't it?
That's a great note, that is, because I've just got one from Doodle Pete. He says, made a wedge on Time, then took the money and ran. So I think he's done the same as you there.
Well done, Pete.
I know.
Nice
and, and David Raywood is asking you whether you're going to Mellow in Derby on the 19th or 20th.
Yes.
Or Gozo, he's saying.
No, I'm going to Mellow for both days. I booked a room at the actual event hotel so that I can stagger upstairs and crash out directly from the venue. So, no, I'm really looking forward to it. The physical events are so good. And I, you know, sadly, this might be the last one because Dave just can't get the he struggles to get constant battles to get companies to actually turn up and meet investors. But it's so valuable when you actually meet people in person, so much better than a Zoom. And it's just great for us as a social thing. So are you going, Paul?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely there.
You're doing the presentation, aren't you? Yeah, of course.
Hangover slot at 8:30 on the Wednesday morning. So people are very, after drinking at the same table with you, they're very white and shell shocked.
Yeah, no, I remember years ago, David Streder got me to do a morning live small cap value report. And we had about 10 pints the night before. So there I was at 7 o'clock trying to read, digest and actually write a report and then present it at 8:30. I said to David, never again. Let Paul Hill do the morning session.
Yeah. Well, we've got Nigel back. He seems, he says, congratulate you, Paul, on getting through without any hiccups. So well done for that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've done well, haven't I?
Very good. Yeah. Okay, guys, we're going to close it there because I did promise it'll only be lasting for an hour, but it's got 67 minutes so far. So thanks to the audience for your questions. Just hold your companies. We've got Kino and we've got a few others, and I think Ashtead Technology will run through in future editions. But it's every week, same time, same place.
Same top investor with Paul Scott. So we'll be running through all the ideas, the biggest sort of news stories, and importantly, what they mean for small caps and to you and I as, you know, investors, our feeling and the rationales, which is what I think everybody wants. So do you have any last words?
This format's worked great. I've really enjoyed this, and I think we've covered some really useful material. So thank you for setting it all up, and thank you to everyone. And give us your feedback, listeners and readers. Tell us what you think of it. If you like it, we'll do them every Friday.
Yeah, we'll sign up to Paul's letter as well. Join me, like everybody else. All right, thanks a lot then, guys, and I'll speak to you at the same time, same place next Friday.
Great. Thanks ever so much. Bye, everyone.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Switching between tools for one project gets disjointed, especially on tight deadlines. Grammarly built a game-changing writing surface tailor-made for professionals to help you move your ideas forward and sharpen your writing. You can brainstorm ideas, summarize meeting notes in seconds, or strengthen a proposal without context switching. Easy to get started and even easier to finish. Sign up for Grammarly free and get your professional writing from draft to done. Visit Grammarly.com. That's Grammarly.com.